Today is the 12th of July, and here are some of the things that have happened on this day in history. 1543 on this day, England's King Henry the VIII married his sixth and last wife, Catherine Parr. So he had quite a few wives. Pretty interesting lady. They were married, of course, on this day in 1543. She outlived him by 1 year. She also was the most married English queen. She was married four times. So between them, they had quite a few different marriages. She enjoyed a close relationship with Henry's three children. She was personally involved in the education of Elizabeth and Edward, both of whom became English monarchs. She was influential in Henry's passing of the Third Succession Act in 1542 that restored both his daughters, Mary and Elizabeth, to the line of succession to the throne. And so she really did quite a bit there in England.
Yeah, this is one of the most famous times in English history, the Tudors. People read, they love reading about Henry VIII and why he had so many wives and his relationship. And he is an interesting man because he was very passionate. He very strong-willed, obviously. And he did a lot for England, but he also obviously had a lot of flaws that were exposed through his marital relationships. Some of his wives died naturally. Some were because of political pressure that he had to distance themselves or execute them. So it's a different age that we can't really judge it by our standards today because he was juggling the future of England in his marriages, really. And in the end, his decision to leave or to divorce the Catholic Church through his divorce of one of his wives actually probably saved England in the long run.
It's tough to enter into a marriage where, you know, the options are it could go really well or you might end up dead.
Right.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, exactly.
in some of those high-profile weddings. 1690 on this day, Protestant forces led by William of Orange defeated the Roman Catholic army of James II. And William of Orange was known as William III of England. As King of Scotland, he's known as William II, and he is informally known by sections of the population in Northern Ireland and Scotland as King Billy. So that was pretty informal, I would say. And it's better than being a hillbilly, though.
Right.
You'd be the king. So he had different names, depending on where he was within the territory there. And one of the things that helped him was the fact that he was Protestant. And so that area over there in the UK, they were afraid of going back to Catholicism. And so he was able to have a little smoother go of it in terms of being in power because they supported the Protestant movement.
Right. Yeah, he's one of the big figures of history. He fought against France single-handedly. He was the only Protestant nation left for a long time until the Glorious Revolution, 1688, I think. And that's when he became King of England as well. And that is really what put England in the Protestant camp forever against Catholicism. And actually, Duke of Marlborough, we talked about yesterday, Churchill's ancestor, fought under King William here. And if the listeners want to read more about him, I encourage it because he is amazing what he's able to accomplish in his life, just fighting against all odds, flooding his own country to stop the French armies. And he lost a lot of battles, but he was never defeated.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, even with the Brexit, because one of the big divides between the UK and Europe is the religion.
Right.
It's Catholicism and Protestantism. So something that isn't maybe talked about as much today, but that was a big issue throughout history. 1806 on this day, the Confederation of the Rhine was established in Germany. It was formed initially from 16 German states by Napoleon after he defeated Austria and Russia in the Battle of Austerlitz. The Treaty of Pressburg, in effect, led to the creation of the Confederation of the Rhine. It lasted from 1806 to 1813. So not a real long time, but they had their moment.
Yeah, well, actually, this was the first step towards unification of Germany under Bismarck. Actually, it was Napoleon. It did fall apart, but the German states did pick up the pieces, and because there were over 1,100 German states before this, little kingdoms everywhere.
That's funny.
And I tried to draw a map of Germany at that time, and it's It just looks like you crunch up a bunch of crackers and just throw them on a sheet of paper because there's little pieces everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's just unbelievable.
It's like little neighborhoods today.
Yeah.
Yeah, here in the U.S. 1864 on this day, U.S. President Abraham Lincoln witnessed the battle where Union forces repelled Jubal Early's army on the outskirts of Washington, D.C. Early's invasion caused considerable panic in Washington and Baltimore, and he was able to get to the outskirts of the city there. He sent some cavalry to the west side of Washington, knowing that he did not have sufficient strength to capture the city. Early led skirmishes at Fort Stevens and Fort DeRuzzi. The opposing forces also had artillery duels on July 11th and 12th. Abraham Lincoln, as we noted there, watched the fighting on both days from Fort Stevens. His lanky frame was a clear target for hostile military fire, although, of course, he wasn't hit. After Early withdrew, he said to one of his officers, "Major, we haven't taken Washington, but we scared Abe Lincoln like hell." So that's his famous quote. But can you imagine that? You're sitting there fighting and you see the long, lanky silhouette of Abraham Lincoln watching?
Yeah, with the top hat and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seeing Abe Lincoln compared to the rest of his officers, men of normal height, he was huge. Because Lee was bottled up in Richmond at the time, and this was their last bid to try to get some peace treaty before Grant took the rest of the war. So, I think this is the only time Abe Lincoln watched a battle during the war. There was a land battle, and I don't think he was too scared though.
Right.
That's just my opinion though.
that was their moral victory.
Yes.
Oh, we really scared him. I don't know. He stood there and watched the whole thing. Couldn't have been that scared. If he was that scared, he would have been down in a bunker somewhere behind some walls. 1933 on this day, minimum wage of 40 cents an hour was established in the U.S. I have to tell my kids that when I tell them to do chores. I won't tell them what it is today. I'll say, yeah, it's about 40 cents an hour, I think. As it was back in 1933.
Save yourself some money.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's about what some of that work is worth, I think, based upon what I've seen. But, yeah, so that's interesting. And now, of course, they want to get it to $15 an hour.
Right.
So we've discussed that in the past. And, of course, you can't just arbitrarily assign a dollar value to a good or service, in this case a service, if it's not there. That is not the way capitalism works.
Yeah. Well, I think it shows how overpriced things are and how inflated goods are today because, standard of living... A cost of living is much higher. So is the standard of living, but cost of living is so high that minimum wage doesn't even cut it at that high.
Yeah,
really anymore. You can still make it work, but it's not too comfortable. It is amazing just to see how prices change, and it's not really based on anything real either. It's just the markets.
On this day in 1957. The U.S. Surgeon General at the time, Leroy Birney, reported that there was a direct link between smoking and lung cancer. That was in 1957. And so before then, it wasn't known, at least not in the way that it is now. And you see old movies, old TV shows, and everybody's smoking cigarettes. And, they still do, I guess, in some of those different things. But it's just so interesting to look back and realize there was a time when people didn't think it was a health concern.
Right. They actually thought it was healthy.
Some cases.
For a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where it glamorized in Hollywood from the war movies and everything continued, especially in the 60s and 70s. I think it was a lot more popular. Science is science, though. Especially with this, I think if you smoke for a number of years, it becomes obvious the health effects on your own body.
And it always makes me think about what are people doing right now that seems pretty common that years from now we'll look back on and think we should have never done that. I mean, in a lot of cases, we're starting to know, some of the foods, the foodless foods that are out there, soft drinks, things like that, to where people are starting to realize that, you know what, that's bad for your body. But to this point, you know, it's not outlawed. You just, you know, people still consume a lot of it.
Yeah, I think another thing that might turn up is what cell phones and some technology, just how much it impacts our health. We've talked about that before, but I think that could be another big thing that we look back on and say, like, yeah, I think we went a little too far.
Self-driving cars.
Yes.
All kinds of things. 1960 on this day, manufacturing began for the Etch-a-Sketch. So we've all had those as kids, I think. You play with the Etch-a-Sketch, and it's a toy that's been popular for a long time. I don't know if it still is to the same extent because there's so much out there, like you talked about with the phones. Even now, the new thing with the phone is this Pokemon game where people are roaming all over the earth trying to find the Pokemon.
Pokemon Go.
Yeah, and that, you know, added like close to $8 billion to Sony.
Right.
whoever wrote that or, you know, came up with the code for that and that idea should get a bonus.
Yeah, well, actually, I read an article yesterday, and the whole thing was started off as an April Fool's joke, and then it actually turned out that people were playing it and downloading it, and they're like, well, okay, we'll run with it. And
wow.
Yeah, it's just amazing that something like that takes off, and it is a weird concept. It's called something reality, where you're moving around in real life, but you're looking for things that actually aren't real.
Huh. Yeah.
I forget what another R word. I forget what it's called, but it's this new genre of games, and this is kind of like, it's the biggest one.
Yeah, and the police, even locally, have said that they have to they tell people just to be careful because sometimes it can lead you to a bad place. Oh, they've had people roaming the parks in the middle of the night playing Pokemon Go.
Right.
And so you can't be out there, and they're just, they told them, like, you can't go on private property. Yeah, but it's just weird. Every time I think, you know, well, we've kind of seen it all. There's a new thing comes out. Here's the one we want to talk about a little bit more today with the time left. 1862 on this day, the U.S. Congress authorized the Medal of Honor.
Yes, this is the highest award for valor in the United States, equivalent of the Victoria Cross in the British Commonwealth. And this was made during the Civil War, actually, first as a naval award, and then it transferred into the other branches as well, signed into law by Abraham Lincoln. And this is what the description is, and it's awarded to anyone who conspicuously by gallantry and intrepidity, which means fearlessness, at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty, while engaged in an action against an enemy of the United States. And a lot of these are awarded posthumously because a lot of them die in the process of doing these acts of valor. And about 3,500 have been awarded throughout the history. And if you can look at a picture of it, there's one on my Twitter of all three, but they're golden gold medals. I think they're bronze with gold coloring. They have a light blue ribbon with 13 stars on them, signify the 13 colonies originally. And each one has a different symbol on it. It says Valor on it, and they're beautiful medals. And the imagery on them is romantic Roman gods of war defending their nation. So there's a lot of symbolism in them as well. And just reading about some of the recipients is pretty amazing. Just the sacrifice and the courage to do this, and all for helping, usually defending other people, saving lives. One in particular I read this morning, during World War II, he led his men. They were outnumbered against a German attack, and he realized that his men had to be led over open ground. So he told them to run back over the crest or else they'd all be killed, and he ran on by himself. And he was able to kill some of them, but he pretty much stood up in no man's land and kept firing his rifle till he died because all the attention was on him and allowed his men to escape.
Yeah, it's amazing when you hear stories like that. And I think in a lot of cases, at least some of the ones that I've read about, you know, it's not really apparent what they'll do. You don't see that hero come out until you're faced with that situation. In day-to-day life, you wouldn't necessarily know who's going to be the one to stand up like that or who's going to run. It's one of those things that only comes out through an excruciating trial like a military conflict.
Right. Yeah. Courage is one of those things that you don't really know if you have until it's tested. And actually, I have a great quote here from Carl Sandburg. He's a famous writer. He wrote Abraham Lincoln's biographies. Great American writer. And this was on the Medal of Honor website. And this is what Carl Sandburg said. Quote, "Valor is a gift. Those having it never know for sure if they have it till the test comes. And those having it, one test never know for sure if they will have it when the next test comes." So, like you said, these soldiers don't really know it. They're not really thinking of themselves as heroes most of the time. And in fact, I read an interview with one of the latest Medal of Honor recipients, and he said he wears it for everyone else that died, because really, in a lot of cases, they're only alive because other men sacrificed their lives. And there's so many stories of uncommon valor, the unrecorded, that this is a fraction of the people who probably should receive the award. And it is amazing to read their stories and to see there are some mighty men left in the world. And it is great to see these stories and to get a feeling of what they went through.
Yeah, oftentimes there's a lot of great honor, of course, but a lot of sadness too. And it seems like sometimes when you see an interview with one of these recipients, they almost have occasionally maybe a sense of guilt that they're still alive, and they're people they were fighting with are not, you know. And like you say, I'm sure there are so many examples of honor and valor, but people just don't know about them and that type of thing. Because unless you survive, or unless somebody else is there to report it, I guess how would anyone know? But it is amazing, those awards. But again, it is, I think, probably pretty bittersweet in a lot of ways to have that honor.
Yeah, this one, the most recent one I read about in the book during the Battle of Fallujah, he's up for the award. He hasn't received it yet, but Sergeant Peralta, he was leading his men into a room in Iraq. He got shot in the face. A surgeon just came out of nowhere and shot him in the face. And his men were trying to find cover, and they threw a grenade right in the middle of all of them. So, but Peralta, he wasn't dead. So he grabbed a grenade, put it under himself.
Wow.
And died absorbing the impact of the grenade. And President Bush called his mother three times because she was busy. She was housemaid. So she was busy, and he called her three times, and he had to call her back just to let her know that her son was up for the Medal of Honor. And a lot of generals personally visit all the casualties that they, the parents and the families that die. And it's just an amazing, amazing story, and a lot of honor given to those sacrifices.
1862, on this day, the U.S. Congress authorized the Medal of Honor. That'll do it for us on Trumpet Radio Live today. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming your way here in just a bit on KPCG. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Abraham Blondeau, have a great rest of your Tuesday, and we'll see you back here tomorrow. You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. We're online, kpcg.fm. We've got a live link at thetrumpet.com.